Good afternoon. This is Ed Waltz with the Mahomet Citizen for the week of January 27th, 2020. We will begin today's reading on the front page with this article. It's under the banner of Parks and Rec. The headline reads, State Grant Coming. Barber Park Project Gets $400,000. Plans to spruce up Barber Park got a big boost Friday, January 17th, when the village of Mahomet was awarded a $400,000 state grant to support phase one of improvements at the park. We are so excited. It's going to be one of the biggest projects that we've done in our history. Barber Park is kind of our marquee park, said Dan Waldinger, director of the Mahomet Parks and Recreation Department. The state funds must be matched, however, so fundraising in the community is the next step, he added. We do have some funding that we'll use from our Capital Parks Fund, which is basically the tax dollars that we've saved and put back, Waldinger noted. We also should be announcing some fundraising soon. Phase one of the improvements and additions at Barber Park will include a new nature-themed playground, spray ground, accessible pathways, and improvements to the pavilion. Conceptual plans can be viewed on the Parks and Recreation website at mahometrecreation.com, village officials noted. Construction is anticipated in 2021 with completion in 2022. Village President Sean Widener welcomed the news. $400,000 is going to go a long way, and we're obviously going to add to that quite a bit with fundraising and everything else, he said. Widener noted that it's widely known that Barber Park's proximity to the Sangamon River means that a large portion of it often floods. But that is addressed in the village's master plan, he said. Future phases then also would be leveling off all the fields so it's maximum flexibility, Widener said, but it's all in the village's master plan. Those who wish to contribute are asked to drop off donations to the rec department at 218 South Lake of the Woods Road or mail them to P.O. Box 259, Mahomet. Every dollar will be matched by this grant up to $400,000. We're excited about that, Waldinger said. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker on Friday, January 17th, announced a total of $29.7 million in grants for park projects statewide. The Open Space Land Acquisition and Development, that's OSLAD, grants will help communities acquire open space and develop and improve recreational facilities, according to a press release from the state. Investments in local park projects are good for families and recreation enthusiasts, helping them enjoy outdoor activities and making Illinois communities better places to live and work, Pritzker said in the media statement. Parks projects also boost local economic development efforts and spur additional investment throughout the state. The Illinois Department of Natural Resources administers the OSLAD program grants. The program can provide up to one-half of a project's funds. When combined with investment of local matching funds, the grants announced January 17th will support more than $56 million in local park development projects and land acquisition statewide. The OSLAD program has invested $403.2 million in 1,729 local park projects since its inception in 1987. The program receives dedicated funding from a percentage of the state's real estate transfer tax. Barber Park features 55 acres of open space, sports fields, seasonal restrooms, a multi-purpose path, and pavilion at 703 South McDougal Road. Phase one of the Barber Park Master Plan, as laid out in June 2018, includes installation of a geyser pad/water feature, play areas, an amphitheater and plaza, earth berms, and new concrete trails. Next up for today, we have this article headlined, Mahomet noted as one of best cities in U.S. The village of Mahomet has been recognized as one of the 50 best cities in the United States in which to live. 24/7 Wall Street declared Mahomet the number 38 best city in the country to live. Village President Sean Widener said, naturally, local residents welcome the recognition. We always think we're number one, Widener said. For us, those are lists that get put out there, and it's great to see. But we live here every day, and we know what a great place Mahomet is for all of our residents to live, work, and play here. It's very humbling, but we know how special Mahomet is, he added. According to 24/7 Wall Street, local governments bear some degree of responsibility for neighborhood safety, economic vitality, the presence and condition of public spaces, and a wide range of other amenities and services that affect the daily lives of local residents. Across the nearly 30,000 cities, towns, villages, and unincorporated places in the United States, these and other factors that are closely tied to quality of life vary considerably. Using over 24 metrics related to affordability, economy, standard of living, and community, 24/7 Wall Street identified the 50 best cities to live in the United States. In order to ensure geographic diversity, we only considered the highest-ranking city in each county. Data came from a number of sources, including the U.S. Census Bureau and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. 24/7 Wall Street, LLC is a Delaware corporation which runs a financial news and opinion company with content delivered over the Internet, according to its website. The company's articles are republished by many of the largest news sites and portals, including MSN, MarketWatch, USA Today, AOL, and newspaper and broadcast sites across America. 24/7 Wall Street lists Mahomet's population as 8,327 and notes a 5-year population growth of 12.3%. The village's median household income is listed as $115,619, with a 5-year average unemployment of 2.8%. The site says of Mahomet, Mahomet is a small village in Illinois, just outside the city of Champaign. Area residents benefit from a healthy job market. Between 2014 and 2018, overall employment climbed 24.1%, and an average of just 2.8% of the labor force were unemployed in the last 5 years, compared to the 6.5% national job growth and 5.9% 5-year average unemployment rate nationwide. The healthy job market has likely contributed to relative financial security for many area residents. Just 2.2% of Mahomet residents live below the poverty line, compared to 14.1% of the U.S. population. Additionally, the median household income in the area of $115,619 is nearly double the national median of $60,293. According to 24/7 Wall Street, its list favors areas with conditions that have almost universal appeal. These include short commute times, walkability, reliable public transit, affordability, job availability, entertainment options, cultural attractions, low crime, and access to places like grocery stores and hospitals. Our next article on the front page is under the banner of Mahomet Seymour Board of Education. The headline reads, Culture of Distrust. Educators rebuke MS School Board. Numerous educators are concerned with the direction of the Mahomet Seymour Board of Education is taking the district, with some stating they feel teachers are being micromanaged by the current school board. James Heinold, a fifth-grade teacher at Lincoln Trail Elementary School and the co-president of the Mahomet Seymour Education Association, was among those who spoke to board members Tuesday during their regular meeting. In the communication portion of the agenda early in the meeting, Heinhold said educators have concerns about some school board policy proposals and he previously spoke to the board's policy committee at its January 13th meeting, I thought it might be best for the MSEA to address the entire board with some of our thoughts and concerns that we have with some of the policies, Heinold said. MSEA leaders surveyed members on a trio of policy proposals in particular, one regarding revisions to board policy addressing showing movies to students in class, another looking at restroom usage for students throughout the school day, and a third policy proposed regarding information sharing with board members. It was the last that drew the most concern from educators, according to Heinold. Quite a few staff are up in arms because they don't know what that entails, he said. What does that mean? I don't have an answer for them. I don't know what that means. As the Citizen reported last week, school board member Ken Keefe, who is also a member of the policy committee, brought forth a policy change suggestion stating any individual board member may request information from district employees. It is not required for board members to state a purpose for the requested information. This proposed change comes in the wake of criticism from other board members after Keefe requested information from Superintendent Lindsay Hall, but would not state his intention for seeking the data. His request for the items, including the salaries and benefits of every employee in the district. The policy proposal also states, if the employee denies a request, they must cite the specific law or policy they are concerned with and notify the entire board of their decision. It's a very scary territory for MSEA members to think about, Heinold said. In the poll of educators regarding that particular policy, 93% of respondents strongly disagree or disagree with the measure, according to Heinold. We are very, very concerned with that policy and what it entails or what it could actually mean to our members if a board member requests information, he said. What are we going to do with that? How are we going to handle that? In open comments from MSEA members via the survey, trust issues were cited multiple times, Heinold told the board. These proposed policies show a lack of trust and respect to the hardworking teachers and staff in our district, he quoted from one survey. Another educator wrote, as Heinold presented, these policies are setting up a culture of distrust and the board should be working to include educational supports and planning for building needs at this time. Among others quoted by Heinold, the action of this board has diminished the trust that I once had in our board. Another one is, it feels very much the board does not see teachers as trusted professional educators, and by extension, the board is not allowing the teachers to exercise their judgment as professionals. Heinold said some issues being addressed via school board policy should go through the school district's chain of command instead. It should be worked out at the building level, and that's where we should be going first, he said. As far as the mistrust, I think a lot of the staff are starting to feel like we're starting to be micromanaged. He said Muhammad Seymour has a roster of highly trained, professional, and dedicated teachers who should be trusted by the Board of Education. Micromanagement doesn't need to happen, Heinold said. We can make those professional decisions on a daily basis, hourly basis, minute-by-minute basis. I wanted to let you know that this is not my voice. I speak for all of the teachers in the MSEA, he noted to the board, pointing out that the meeting room was full to capacity and many audience members were educators. Heinold was asked a follow-up question by school board member Colleen Schultz, who sought to identify any other top concerns of Muhammad Seymour teachers not yet discussed in Heinold's presentation. I think the big thing is just trust. I think we addressed it, the trust, the micromanagement, he said. I think that we feel like we're being minimalized in a job that we're very highly qualified to do. In response, directly after Heinold spoke, Keefe asked a follow-up question as well. Aside from the three policy proposals you mentioned, is there an other situations where the board is micromanaging staff? He asked. Heinold replied, no, those are the three policy proposals that really stuck out to the teachers and the staff as far as regards to MSEA. Those are the three things that came out that seemed to be bothersome. Keefe said, I'm very grateful for your feedback on it because that's what this process is supposed to be about. Later, during visitor communication to the board, teacher Lori Zimmerman was among those echoing Heinold and the MSEA members' points. I wanted to speak tonight because I'm concerned about the future of our school district and the Board of Education, said Zimmerman, who is a sixth grade teacher at Muhammad Seymour Junior High School. Since the last board election, I have many concerns. Most recently, I have become aware of three proposed board policies that seem to tell teachers, we don't trust you to do your job. As teachers, we should follow the chain of command and answer to our building principals if they have concerns as to how we are doing our job, she said. It isn't the Board of Education's job to micromanage what we do in our classroom. It's the board's job to hire a superintendent and allow them to lead. Governance and guidance for the school district is also the role of the board, Zimmerman said. Arguing with each other during board meetings, questioning everything that the superintendent does, and proposing a policy where board members can go around administration and question the teachers directly is not what a school board should be doing. People know that I am a lifelong teacher in Muhammad and ask me what's going on with the school board, she said. It's embarrassing for our district and our town. Muhammad Seymour is such a great school district with wonderful families, hard-working students and teachers, and excellent administrators, Zimmerman said. My concern is that continued attempts at micromanagement may cause teachers and administrators to leave the district and board members to leave the board. I'm hopeful that you will see the positives in working together as a school board and allow our superintendent to lead the district, she added. Board of Education members Keith Schultz and Megan Hennessy joined the school board as a result of spring elections. Jeremy Hendricks was reelected. The other members of the board are Max McComb, president, Lori Larson, vice president, and Merle Giles, secretary. And now, turning to page A3, under obituaries, we have the following death notices of local and area interest. Jan Louise Brunning, 67, of Bellflower, passed away Wednesday, January 15, 2020, at Danville Care Center. Visitation was 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, January 18, 2020, at Bellflower United Methodist Church. Funeral services followed at 11 a.m., also at the church, with Pastor Luella Pence officiating. Burial was in Bellflower Cemetery. Edward M. Eichelberger, 95, of Rantoul, passed away on Monday, January 13, 2020, at Carl Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services were at 11 o'clock Friday morning at the East Bend Mennonite Church in rural Fisher. The Reverend Luke Rosenberger officiated. Teresa A. Gray, 89, of Muhammad and formerly of Champaign, passed away Wednesday, January 15, 2020, at home, surrounded by her family. A funeral mass was held in Teresa's honor on Saturday, January 18, 2020, at 11 a.m. at Our Lady of the Lake Catholic Church at 501 West State Street in Muhammad. She was entombed at Mount Hope Mausoleum in Champaign, next to her late husband. George Lloyd, 82, of Muhammad, died Thursday, January 16, 2020. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Sunset Funeral Home in Champaign, 710 North Neal Street, Champaign. And now, returning to the news and views on page A3, we have this article headlined, Board Members Respond, and that is in response to the earlier read school article. Schultz proposed the restroom policy, which states all students will be permitted access to the restroom at least one time per hour throughout the school day. A passing period will not be considered as restroom access if the passing period is less than 5 minutes. no student will receive any negative consequence for requesting to use the restroom. Speaking after many visitor comments criticizing that and the two other policies in the spotlight, Schultz became emotional. She noted that the restroom policy was on Tuesday's agenda for discussion, not action. "I do support teachers," she said. "Parents came to me and they were complaining. I've heard these complaints in the community for at least 7 years about students complaining that they cannot use the bathroom at school." She explained that she learned that many students limit their water intake throughout the school day because they do not have time to use the restroom. She said her policy proposal is intended to be a start to address that problem. "My goal is to help kids," Schultz said. "I'm not perfect and I make mistakes. I'm just here for kids." During his time for general comments by board members at the meeting, Keefe lent support to the proposed restroom break policy. He said some parents have told him also that students have learned to just not drink water during the day. "I think this is a real problem that's happening," Keefe said. "I really look forward to how we administratively we can solve this problem before we have to go the route of policy." Hennessy, in her remarks during time scheduled for board members to bring up any items they wish, said she hadn't planned to offer comments but chose to after hearing from Heinold on behalf of the MSEA and other visitors. "It's no secret to those of us sitting at this board table that there's an issue," she said. "We don't like disagreeing with each other any more than you like having to watch it. I've heard things said in the community. I've read things on social media. A lot of people are applying intentions to certain things for certain people, apparently without ever even talking to people or telling people what they think or why they're doing something." Hennessy added, "I think that's dangerous, and I think it's counterproductive to us as a community. I think we all can do a little part by checking our own behavior. Maybe we can take a moment to start to see clearing what goes on," she said. "Maybe we can take a moment and give people the benefit of the doubt. Maybe if we have a question, we can ask the person directly. If we hear something about someone's intent and it's not coming out of their mouth, maybe we can do them the courtesy of stopping and pausing to see if that is true." Hennessy also said more face-to-face communication is needed. "We haven't even had a chance to talk about any of these policies," she said. "They haven't even come to a first reading, and yet it's very clear to me that there's a narrative in the community about what these policies are for, what they're trying to do, and the intents behind them. I don't know what all those intents are, because I haven't even had a chance to hear from the person bringing the policy what the concerns were, are, or what they are for. But there's a narrative being played out for. I'm not sure what reason, but I do know for a fact that it is getting in the way of us doing the business of the people," Hennessy said. "And I, for one, in 2020, am going to do my very best to participate in a way that is helpful and participate in a way that I see you. I don't have to agree with you, but I see you as a person, and I'm going to connect with you on that level first. I have no doubt that this district can solve all of the problems that we have in front of us if we work together," she said. Keefe spoke extensively to address visitor comments about the proposed policies in question, particularly the one he has suggested regarding staff sharing of information with board members. "I've heard a truly remarkable amount of fear and uncertainty and doubt from our staff, especially in the past 6 days. I have to say, we have to overcome this," Keefe said. "We have to learn to talk to one another. We have to learn how to break down these barriers. We can't let the fear of retribution, fear of misunderstanding, just basic fear of each other, control us," he said. "There are elements in our community that want nothing more than that this board to fail, and we can't allow that." He later tabled indefinitely his proposed policy regarding board members receiving information from staff upon request. He addressed his original request for items including each district employee's salary and benefits package, which ultimately led to the proposed information policy change decried by many at Tuesday's meeting. "In my opinion, lies have been spread about the purpose of my request to the point that the MSEA has come to the board to express concern over this request for financial data," Keefe said. "There were suggestions that I may be using this data for some nefarious purpose. I've heard recently from teachers and staff that my request has the purpose of cutting salaries or firing teachers. These are actual things I've heard, he said. Even though those old ideas are completely ludicrous on the face of it, because as an individual, I have no power to do that. And anyone who's ever heard me talk about what I care about would know that it is a ridiculous idea. In the face of lies and fear, we must turn to the truth, Keefe said. Then he gave the reason for his original request. He said he ran on four platforms when elected, focusing the board on curriculum decisions, improving engagement with the community, making the board and district more transparent, and reducing class sizes. Keefe said he sought the information on all district staff salaries and benefits because he is in the early stages of crafting a proposal to add classes, to reduce class size, and to increase pay for Muhammad Seymour teachers. We want smaller class sizes, Keefe said, and I would like us, Muhammad Seymour, to be the highest paying district in our area. He noted he had trouble accessing the information he needed, hence the policy proposal on staffers sharing information with board members. There's a lot of this data that is not public, and we have to get that directly from our staff, Keefe said. I don't want to bring any of this forward yet because the proposal is not ready. However, the fire of fear, uncertainty, and doubt about the work that I am trying to do on this board has raged too high, he said. I hope that this information, as damaging as it could be toward my goals, will help to douse that fire. In his comments addressing the issues of trust and micromanagement, Hendricks said, I think so much of this comes down to trust and authority. He said parents must have authority over their children and teachers must have authority over students and be supported by parents and other education professionals. The Board of Education must trust its staff, such as building administrators, he added. And we have to trust our superintendent and give her the authority to do her job, Henrik said. And we've got to develop some trust here that we've got the right people in place already to do these things. I think at its core there is a trust issue, and we've known this for a while, but also we have to be willing to give these individuals authority to do their jobs in their various spheres to accomplish these tasks. McComb said policies are necessary, but really what we need, in my opinion, is good people, and we've got about 400 employees in this district, give or take a few. And I don't know that any one of about 400 employees or anyone else in this room or our community claims to be perfect. I've never heard anybody do that, McComb said. But I'd put our team of education professionals against any other team in the state of Illinois. We've got problems that we need to work through. We've got some concerns, he added. I'm hoping that we can talk with our staff and work together with our teachers and administrators and other folks and come up with something that makes sense. And now turning to page A5, we have the community calendar items of note. The first is headlined New Reading Group to begin. The Muhammad Public Library, 1702 East Oak Street, is hosting an environmental reading group for adults on the fourth Mondays of the month, January through April. The first was at 6:30 p.m. Monday, January 27th, and featured Rising Dispatches from the North American Shore. Join moderator Jordan Connerty for this new topical book club open to anyone interested in conversations related to environmental history, science, conservation, sustainability, or justice. The group's carefully curated reading list incorporates works of fiction and nonfiction, both historical and contemporary, to inspire conversations about the complexity of the natural world and the relationship between humans and the environment. Discussions will be centered around various titles from January to April. Participants are asked to register for each month they wish to attend, so organizers have an idea of how many people will be attending. The library's phone number is 217-586-2611. And they're still looking for piecemeal senior nutrition program volunteers. Please call 800-543-1773 if you'd like to help. This has been the Muhammad Citizen for the week of January 27th, 2020. I look forward to reading with you again soon. For Illinois Radio Reader, I'm Ed Walsh.